FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's April 9th, 2018. Hey, as always, join the conversation, join the show, email us the email address kl@kerrylutz.com or use the hotline, which is 914-424-4142. Leave a message, and we just might play it on the show. We'll certainly answer it one way or the other. So what's going on here with China and the U.S., the so-called trade war? Imagine if they had a war and nobody came. Well, important things are being discussed behind the scenes, no doubt. And someone who kind of has a good idea what's happening, Harlan Ullman. Harlan, you served as senior on the senior advisory group for the Supreme Allied Command in Europe from 2004 to 16, senior advisor to DC's Atlantic Council. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention your latest book, that you authored Anatomy of Failure. And welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. And by the way, the subtitle is germane here. It's called Anatomy of Failure, Why America Loses Every War It Starts. And whereas that book was focused on the uses of military forces and failures, as well as successes, the same thing applies to economics, as I'm sure we're going to discuss shortly.
Yeah. So, well, but, you know, like the concept of a trade war is really a cliche, isn't it? There's no such thing as a trade war. That's a media term. It's a lot more complicated than that. It's a lot easier for the media in its finite wisdom to simply say, oh, it's a trade war, and then it requires no further analysis, because we all know how wonderful free trade is, and that any controls placed upon it or equity imposed is bad for the world, right?
That's absolutely true. I don't have a problem with the phrase trade war, because when you think about what tariffs can do, and obviously the usual suspect here is Smoot-Hawley of 1930, which helped to exacerbate the Great Depression. But tariffs, in essence, become taxes which consumers will pay, and then you get retaliation, and that does nobody any good. And in this particular condition, the United States is trying to force China to be more cooperative, and therefore we are using the leverage of potential tariffs to be imposed on goods and services that we are going to import from them to try to rectify the trade imbalance of some $375 billion. But there are several issues here that people don't seem to understand. First, in any kind of bookkeeping, there is the current account, which is trade, goods and services, and the capital account. And whereas we may have a $350 billion or so deficit in trade, we have about a $2 trillion surplus in Chinese investment in states. China owns about $1 trillion of U.S. treasuries and probably at least an equal amount in U.S. stocks and equities. And so if China decided that they wanted to get nasty, and if a trade war did develop, suppose China started to unload U.S. treasuries or sell off in the stock market. There are all sorts of ways that China can hurt us that I don't think that the administration fully understands. Now, clearly, China has been taking great advantages of us economically, especially in terms of stealing intellectual property. But going through the World Trade Organization and courts is probably a much better way than doing it, rather than threatening a trade war through the increase in tariffs. And you see how the stock market has reacted, soaring up and down in a rather crazy gyration over the last week.
Sure. But, okay, theft of intellectual property. The World Trade Organization, all of our allies have known about it. They've been victim to it, and nothing's happened. The World Trade Organization, with all due respect, Harlan, is not going to do a damn thing about it. They haven't done anything about it. And a lot of it is, besides what takes place through hacking, through spying, the fact that in order for an American company to open a branch in China, they got to give their whole IP portfolio to the government, or they've got to take on a partner, a local partner, which is like, there was a story one time about Huntington Hartford III, and he was opening Resorts International in Paradise Island in the Bahamas. And he had a deal all set. And then at the last minute, the government of the Bahamas said, hey, meet your new partner. And the partner was right. A person of ill repute who really couldn't have cared less about the shareholders of Resorts.
Of course.
And that's exactly what the Chinese are doing. There is other way to handle this, in my opinion, than a direct confrontation where the Europeans are really cheering on the sidelines because every one of their companies that's doing business there, from Airbus to Mercedes-Benz to BASF, is forced to give up their IP, which in the information age often is your most valuable asset. You can't.
The gloves
got to come off.
About IP and the fact that this has gone on for a very long time, I could not agree with you more. We should have taken action a long time ago. But the question is, well, how do we take the most effective action without doing the greatest amount of damage to us? And first of all, if companies are really smart, they can limit their IP. And I think that situation has been somewhat exaggerated. Second, China is not the only country that steals our IP, by the way. We have allies in Europe who are very, very good about it, and we remain very, very, very silent. And the best way to protect our IP is for companies to have far more secure cyber systems. And I'm not blaming those companies, but I am saying that one way that we can approach this is to be far more protective and demand that our cyber companies or our companies have greater security. And a lot of these damages are really self-imposed by laxity on our side. Look, what's needed is a high-level conversation. President Trump thinks he's got a good relation with President Xi. They needed to sit down and say, look, here are the issues that divide us. What is the smartest way for us to be able to work these things out? You don't do it through the blunt trauma of a tariff threat. Because, look, the way that the Chinese are going to respond, and here's an historical example that shows how China responds under crises. In 1950, remember, the North Koreans invaded South, and General of the Army Douglas MacArthur launched the Incheon attack, the end around, that drove the North Koreans up towards the border with China, the Yalu River. And China signaled not once, but three times with massive attacks, and then withdrew, telling MacArthur that they were serious. MacArthur ignored all that, and the million Chinese came across the border. The reason that this is an important analogy is that China ultimately will spawn. They will do it on a measured way, but their response is liable to be very, very, very difficult for us. I think it can be circumvented by other means. You can lodge lawsuits against China. There are lots of other ways that we could have done this, and I think that Mr. Trump, who views himself as a strong negotiator, believes that he is going to threaten China to do this, end up with a negotiation, and that will be all of it. He may have been able to do this successfully in real estate, but he is playing with not only dynamite, but dynamite that's on top of a huge amount of gasoline that could easily explode. And if it did, we'll all be off for it.
You know what it's like? It's like that James Dean movie, Rebel Without a Cause, and they're both in their cars having a drag race, and the finish line is the cliff. So I just think there's a better plan here. There's a plan in place. More so, it's kind of like the reluctant jackass that won't move, and you push him, and you cajole him, and you yank his reins, and you can't get him to move, and then you finally, in desperation, grab a 2x4, hit him over the head, and then he looks at you and you say, now I got your attention. All right, he's got their attention. Every other president before him did absolutely nothing about this, and discriminatory taxes, non-tariff trade barriers, all this. And China says, well, we're going to put a tariff on soybeans. And guess what happened, Harlan? You know, Europe stepped right up to the plate and took all of the production. So I think it's overblown. There isn't going to be a trade war because it's in nobody's interest.
Well, that's a different issue.
There is.
If you take the argument that the president is posturing this as Larry Kudlow, his new economic advisor, as a negotiating tactic, that's fine. But he needs to know what he's doing, and he needs to know when he's going to negotiate. Because what I'm assuming is that the president is going to say, I'm not going to back down. He's going to force the Chinese into a position where they're not going to back down. And all of a sudden, we have a trade war that all of us want to avoid. That is the biggest question here. Now, if there's some back-channel diplomacy with Robert Lighthizer, our trade representative, talking to China about that, that's fine. And if the president wants to use this as a means to encourage China to negotiate, that's terrific. But given the president's past activities, it seems to me I'm not sure that there is a plan B. He may well think that this threat is going to be enough to induce China to negotiate. And without any knowledge of what's happening in back channels, this is potentially a very bad situation, as is being mirrored in the stock markets across the world because of the issue of uncertainty here. Now, you're absolutely right. Nothing has happened yet. And this may lead to a negotiation. And if it does, then the president can claim great credit for taking action when nobody else has. But there's also a huge risk. And my argument is that we could accomplish the same issues without necessarily having the same degree of risk, because China has many ways that they can take advantage of us, as I said, selling our treasuries, posturing to make the renminbi or the yuan the central reserve currency, driving out the dollar. There are all sorts of things that we have just not thought through. And I think the other thing that we haven't thought through, and I put this responsibility of Wilbur Ross, the Secretary of Commerce, it is not just the trade balance, as I noted. It's the capital account. China has got more than $2 trillion invested in this country. They, in essence, are helping to solve our problem of debt and deficit. And so I think all this has to be taken into consideration, and I'm just not sure that a coherent policy has been manufactured on the part of the administration. I hope I'm wrong, but I see no evidence of it, even though, as you point out, there may well be a carefully thought out strategy to deal with these issues.
Yeah, like I say, I don't believe it's ever going to happen. You know, as a cycle guy, what I've come to realize more and more over time, the cycles create the news. The news doesn't create the cycles. And this is a cycle that's been going on for a long time. Maybe it's the cycle of America in decline. I wouldn't doubt it. And maybe the stock market is just going to get the hard end of the stick here, at least in the short term. All of this is possible. But the reality of it is that the relationship was purely exploitative. You know, China is living in another century, the 19th century, and a lot of their policies go back to there, of just pure outright mercantilism. And unless
that, Kerry, is you have to go back to the capital account. China's got somewhere between $2 and $3 trillion invested in the United States, which is to our great advantage. And that cannot be discounted.
Maybe it's to our advantage. I don't know. But having them buy up key technology companies, probably not to our advantage. Having them be
Well, that's because
biggest...
we're stupid. No, that's a different issue. If we want to do stupid things, you can't blame the Chinese on our stupidity.
And we
have things like the Committee on Foreign Investment, CFIUS, who is now starting to take a harder line. Look, if we are stupid enough to sell to the Chinese something that's not in our interest, we can't blame the Chinese. And
I agree with you that
many of our past policies have been foolish. There's no doubt about that.
Hey, the same people that brought you Uranium One allowed China to buy up all these technology companies, all this IP, you know, stripped the country. So, of course, you know, that's strictly our bad. You can't blame, you know, you have to understand they're an adversary. Hopefully there will never be a military adversary, but they are an adversary in terms of economic interest. And if you want to try to pretend that there's something else and that everything's going to be fine because, you know, prosperity you know, a rising tide lifts all boats, that's fine. But that is ignoring the reality of this situation here. And if nothing else, it's a wake-up call for everybody that, hey, we got to protect the national interest and stop the globalistic encroachment.
Well, let me give you plan B here. And it's called being smart. China is going to be taking the lead in artificial intelligence in many of the green technologies. And my view is there's no reason why we can't reverse this on China and be able to use their technologies. And I see no reason why we should not be doing that in a, to a far, far bigger degree than we are. Turnabout is fair play. And I think that we have been, as I said earlier, foolish in too many ways in how we have dealt with China. And I agree with you with some of the criticisms. But the way to deal with them now is to be smart and not to take steps that could be in our mutual disinterest. And I think that, that what we ought to realize is that in this world, we cannot control all the technologies and we cannot simply not be the world leaders in all these technologies because we have a relatively small population and brains are well distributed throughout the planet. And so we ought to be a lot more interested in seeing what those technologies that may be developed by other countries, including China, and how can we possibly exploit them? That's a simple approach that we should be taking, as many countries do to us.
Absolutely. But let's not forget the steel, aluminum, there's a national security component there. Look, the Oakland Bay Bridge.
Stop.
Hold it. The Oakland Bay Bridge was built with imported Chinese steel.
Name one national security expert who makes that case.
The
former Secretary of State and the current Secretary of Defense said there is no national security argument that requires the need for tariffs on aluminum and steel.
Wait. So let's look at the Oakland Bay Bridge. Built with pure imported Chinese steel, the new span, I think it's the southern span, replacement span. It's falling apart. The stuff is corroding. All right. Was that a deliberate attack by China, shipping us shoddy steel for a bridge that's kind of key and central to moving the traffic through the Oakland Bay, you know, San Francisco Bay area? You know, there is a national defense component because are we using their steel to build our ships? Is that what we can expect from their products? So national security is definitely involved here. If we have no capability to produce high quality steel, then we got to rely on others to produce it. I think there's a national security component here, Harlan, don't you?
No, absolutely not. Look, if people are going to go to the low cost bidder and buy shoddy stuff, that's their responsibility. And so there are other means. U.S. steel is doing quite well. Thank you very much. There are ways that we can produce the steel. I think what happens is that people are going after the low-cost steel, and it's any kind of a low-cost product, which happens. There is no real national security interest here. Now, the administration has done its best because it's the only way that it can impose the embargoes, or I should say the tariffs. But in this particular case, I would hold the people who were contracting the bridges directly responsible. I mean, supposing they had bought bad steel or faulty steel from another manufacturer, even in the United States, it's their responsibility, and that's where I would put the onus.
But in this case,
you can make all these arguments.
There's no question.
You can make all these arguments about national security, but it seems to me that it's a false argument. And quite frankly, the number of ships we're building, military ships, are in such small numbers that we can obviously manufacture all the necessary steel for here. And by the way, there is, in terms of defense procurement, something called Buy America. Mm-hmm. So our shipbuilders are forced to use American steel, which I assume is going to be of top quality.
If it exists, but yes.
Oh, it does exist.
But certainly the responsibility is the local, authority in California that bought the crappy steel. But the point is that this is an example where, you know, they had an opportunity to stick the knife in and they took it. I don't think it's just a coincidence that it worked out this way, but we can agree to disagree on that. We agree on a lot of other things, no doubt. Trade wars, nobody's interest, but free trade for the sake of free trade probably isn't in the U.S.'s interest anyway. Hey, Harlan, if we want to get your book, and just tell us the name of your book again.
It's Anatomy of Failure, Why America Loses Every War It Starts. It has very, very strong verbs from people such as General Colin Powell, former Senator John Kerry, General Jim Jones, Shaka Aziz, the former Pakistani Prime Minister. And the book is as current as you can possibly imagine, particularly with the situation heating up in North Korea, what's going to happen in Syria. And it's a handbook about if you're going to use military force, make sure you exercise it with the proper judgment and sufficient knowledge and understanding of the situation in which you're getting in so that you have a good plan to get out. And of course, that didn't happen in Vietnam, and it certainly didn't happen in the second Iraq War. And I hope it doesn't happen with a potential trade war, because as you and I agree, that's in nobody's interest. And I would just make one further modification. I don't believe in free trade. I believe in fair trade. And I think we ought to be talking about our policies in terms of fair trade, exactly. Which means that there's an even playing field. That's what we should be shooting for. And I think, as you don't like the term trade war, I think free trade is a misnomer. We're talking about fair trade.
Yeah, well, there is no such thing as free trade, and there is no such thing as a trade war. You know, going back and trying to make an analogy to Smoot-Hawley, we were a lot less sophisticated then in terms of economics. We were a lot less integrated as a world. The U.S., had so much capacity and the ability, and it was a net creditor to the world and the low-cost producer for everything. Times have changed. That's no longer the case. So the damage from a trade war, so-called trade war, I think limited and isn't really going to happen. But, you know, hey, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. So we get your book over at Amazon, I take it.
Amazon.com. The best way to do it is online, and I'll send it to you in a day.
All right. Wherever fine books used to be sold. I got your web.
That's a very good mark.
And your website, your website here is Harlan Ullman, HARLANULLMAN.net. So you can go there, read your latest work, and see your take on things.
That's right. I write three columns a week for a variety of newspapers, and I can also be reached on Twitter at Harlan K. Ullman.
Excellent. Hey, and by the way, be part of the conversation. If there's anything you found interesting about our discussion or anything else you hear on the show, just email us, kl@carrylutz.com. Use the hotline 914-424-4142 to leave your comments and feedback. The Twitter feed's at Carrie Lutz and the Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Harlan, I really appreciate you coming on.
Our pleasure. And, great chatting with you. Thank you very much indeed. Good discussion.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.